This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Hello. Hello, good friends. Apparently, the sixth patriarch Huimin would start all his talks with good friends, so I figured it's in the family style, good friends, hello. I'd like to tell you a story. In China, in the beginning of the golden age of Zen, this is during the early 700s, Baso Doitsu was practicing at Fayuan Temple, which is actually still there. It's in Beijing. So Baso was practicing there, and he met his teacher, Nengaku Eijo. So Nengaku Eijo had already awakened his eye, so he could see that Baso would make a fine student. And one day outside the Zendo, Master Eijo asked him, "Venerable monk, what are you trying to accomplish with this sitting? Why are you sitting Zazen?" And Baso replied, "I sit Zazen to become a Buddha." And Master Eijo then picked up a roofing tile from the ground and started to polish it, while Baso looked on. Finally, Baso asked, "Why are you polishing that roofing tile?" And Master Eijo said, "I'm polishing it to make it into a mirror." Baso said, "You can't polish a roofing tile into a mirror." And Master Eijo said, "Just as polishing a roofing tile won't ever make it a mirror, sitting Zazen won't make you a Buddha." So usually when we hear this story, that's where it ends. But in researching it, of course, I remember there's a few more lines to it. So I wanted to share those as well. So Master Eijo said, "Just as polishing a roofing tile won't ever make it into a mirror, sitting Zazen won't make you a Buddha." Baso asked, "Then how should I proceed?" What a tender question. "Then how should I proceed?" Master Eijo said, If you hitch a cart to an ox, the cart doesn't move. Do you whip the cart or do you whip the ox?" And at this, Baso was struck wordless. So Baso clearly understands that polishing a roofing tile will never make it a mirror. He still is operating under this false belief that he can grind himself into a Buddha on the Zafu. While we can admire his energy and his focus, he's missing the mark. And I can't help but think of how often I've tried to do the same thing. Fix it. I'll fix it on the cushion. I'll finally get over it doing sesshin. I'll break through. I'll finally, whatever. But you know, if bullying ourselves actually worked, I would have been enlightened a couple dozen sesshin ago. So Master Eijo, seeing his determination, seeing Baso's strength and his potential, maybe he felt, be ashamed. to leave him in the weeds like this. So in his compassion, he sets up a little play in the courtyard for him. Oh, look, some discarded broken roofing tiles. Let's give him a little polish. Let's see if this monk can pick up the trail again. So Master Ejo, sensing the strong resolve in the younger monk, we're talking about Baso Doitsu. He's often known by his Chinese name as Master Ma Zu, but he wasn't Master Ma yet. And in fact, Master Ejo, the computer's telling me something. It says I've been signed out of Zoom, maybe. Interesting. Oh, Eno, please pick the word. Just polish it, please.
I think you're still recording. It says recording.
Okay.
So let's make sure. Stop the recording while I do that.
So, Master Ejo sees that Baso might be in the weeds and figures, I'll put on a little show for him. Basically, leaving a few breadcrumbs to see if we could help him out of his little stuck spot. Master Ejo, sensing the resolve of Baso, who of course is, as I was saying, is actually young Master Ma, if you follow his Chinese name. And in fact, Master Ejo became Baso's preceptor. So the exceedingly accomplished Master Ejo and his celebrated disciple, Baso. They're quite the duo. So this is a really beautiful kind of moment where we get to find out what it was like when they met. And so, yes, his name was Baso Doitsu, which means something like ancestor horse, one road. It's a very interesting Dharma name. And just from his name, I can imagine him as having a lot of energy and being really strong and determined as a Zen student. Ancestor horse. But perhaps with that energy, there was a little rigidity. So Ejo comes along and lets him know there's more to this than just Zazen, and your aim is off. I found a little cartoon. I tend to do this and put little cartoons in my notes. It's a little monk grimacing, and then there's, I guess that's Ejo polishing a tile. So how is his aim off? What's he missing? Because he's saying no amount of sitting is making you a Buddha. And no amount of polishing will turn terracotta into a mirror. And thinking it's the tile's fault to try and change anything about that situation isn't going to work. But if that's what you need to do, go ahead, polish. Polish away. Polish to heart's content. And if you sit 1,000 more sashrin and you still don't become a Buddha, blaming yourself isn't going to change anything about that situation. But I think that we all at least start this practice with the idea that Zazen will lead to Buddhahood, that the end of my suffering is just a couple more of these knee-busting, you know, sleep-deprived circuses away. It's just over the horizon. But Zazen doesn't lead to awakening. Zazen is the expression of our awakening. So Master Ajo adds one more blow. What compassion? Master Ajo asks, what do you whip, the cart or the ox? So if you hitch your ox to a cart and it doesn't go, and you whip the cart, nothing's going to happen. Don't you see? If you hitch your ox to a roofing tile, if you hitch your ox to Master Ajo, if you hitch your ox to Buddhahood, if I hitch my ox to apple cake, what's going to happen? Master Ajo is holding nothing back in his generosity. He's saying, maybe whipping the cart and your Zazen are the same, my dear one. He's saying, it's your mind that you need to work on, the ox, not the cart. Besides, you can't use your Zazen like that. In fact, don't use your Zazen at all. Let Zazen sit Zazen. Get clean out of the way if you can. Pema Chodron said, meditation practice isn't about trying to throw ourselves away and become something better. It's about befriending who we already are. That's not what I signed up for. Or as the jazz musician Thelonious Monk said, a genius is a person who is most like himself. So if you're sitting there and you're thinking, okay, well, then I'll whip the ox. But I'm saying what you're expressing there is actually our habit of separation. What you're expressing there is just further perpetuating dualism and not the point of the story. You have to look with a different eye. But by leaning into your perceived separateness, it's not going to get you any nearer to what you seek. And by the way, don't seek. Trust it. Trust it, because as the ox moves, so does the cart. As the ox moves, so does the cart. So just like how the ox and cart move along, so does mind and body. Just like how the ox is so well suited for this, and the cart was made for this, your body was made to sit zazen. Your mind was made for awakening. And it's your zazen that is one of the functions of your awakening, your enlightenment. Buddha is already here. But by sitting to attain that awakening, to attain Buddhahood, well, you're just polishing a tile. You've already got it. It's like Jack Kerouac said, equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. Equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. Have you ever heard that quote before? It's one of my favorites of his. And I didn't realize it had come from a longer passage, and I hunted it down. And it goes like this. I sit down and I say, and I run all my friends, my relatives, my enemies, one by one by one, without entertaining any angers or gratitudes or anything. I say it like this, Jaffe Ryder, equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. Then I run on, I say, David O. Selznick, equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming Buddha. Though I don't use names like David O. Selznick, just people I know, because when I say the words equally a coming Buddha, I want to be thinking of their eyes. Like you take Morley, his blue eyes behind those glasses, then you think equally a coming Buddha. You think of those eyes, and you really do suddenly see the true secret serenity and all that truth of his coming Buddhahood. Then you think of your enemy's eyes. Wow. Glad I took the time to hunt that one down. So yeah, if you're focused on becoming a Buddha, you miss the Buddha where you are. And you have to see yourself as a Buddha, or at least equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming one, right? And as soon as you create this posture, as soon as you take your seat, it's there. The Buddha has been revealed. Josh Buddha, Kim Buddha, Alisa Buddha, Tenzo Buddha, Thomas Buddha, Tess Buddha, Miguel Buddha, Chuck Buddha. Another Pema Chodron quote. Holding on to beliefs limits our experience of life. That doesn't mean that beliefs or opinions or our ideas are a problem. It's the stubborn attitude of having to have things be a particular way, grasping on to our beliefs and our opinions, that causes the problems. Using your belief system this way creates a situation in which you choose to be blind instead of being able to see, where you choose to be deaf instead of being able to hear, to be dead rather than alive, to be asleep rather than awake. As people who want to live a good, full, unrestricted, adventurous, real kind of life, there is a concrete instruction that we can follow. See what is. Without calling your belief right or wrong, just acknowledge it. See it clearly without judgment and let it go. Come back to the present moment. From now until the moment of your death, you could do this. Something so very Zen about a teddy bear mug. So our path is not about becoming something else. It's rather about unbecoming what isn't truly us, what isn't truly ourselves. It's then we can be truly free when we've dropped that. So don't whip yourself with the idea that you aren't enough or that your kind of Buddha isn't needed. Each of us is needed to hold down our own Dharma position. And what if instead of whipping our ox, we try guiding it? Sometimes with my ox, I have to get down. I have to get in front of it, and I have to lead it a little bit. Sometimes my ox lets me ride the cart. Sometimes my ox maybe lets me ride on the back. What a great friend to have on the path, this ox, huh? Can I tell you another story? So seeing as the theme of our session is Tanjoe, which is basically the Buddha's birthday session. And we're going to be culminating with this Buddha's birthday celebration. I wanted to tell you a little bit about Buddha before he was born, because he's not here yet. He's not born yet. So some of these stories of Buddha's past lives, the Buddha before he was born, are called the Jataka tales. They tend to be a bit like morality plays, or sometimes like Aesop's fables. They tend to be, tend to have a lot of animals and a lot of, you know, right and wrong lessons to them. So once upon a time, strong start. Once upon a time in Gandhara, an old kingdom in what is now today northern India and Pakistan, there was a place called Takasila. And in that place, the enlightenment being was born as a calf. He was an excellent and strong calf and was brought and was bought by a wealthy landowner who became very fond of the gentle and noble ox and named him Delightful. He took excellent care of Delightful and gave him only the best feed. And when Delightful grew into a strong ox, he thought, "This generous man has given me everything an animal could want. Good care, plenty of food, water, and because of this, I have grown incredibly strong and I can pull the heaviest of loads. I would like to repay my master by using my strength to benefit him." So Delightful said to his master, "Find a wealthy merchant in town who has the strongest oxen and challenge him, saying that your own ox can pull 100 carts." The master found a merchant who was boasting to have the strongest oxen in all the land. So he challenged him. He said, "I have an ox that can pull 100 carts. There's none stronger." The merchant said, "There is no ox that strong. I will bet you 1,000 gold coins he cannot." So they set a challenge, with the merchant setting up 100 carts, deciding to load them with rocks to make them especially heavy and challenging. The master, in preparing the ox for the challenge, bathed him and fed him the finest grains. He strung a beautiful garland of flowers around Delightful's neck. The master led Delightful to a town where a hundred carts were waiting. Seeing the merchant and the assembled crowd, the master couldn't resist making himself seem important. So he yoked the ox and he started to whip at Delightful. "Pull, you dumb beast, pull, for I, your master, command you," he said as he whipped the air above the ox's head. Delightful thought, "This challenge was my idea, and I have never even disobeyed my master, yet how he beats me and insults me." So Delightful stayed in his place and wouldn't budge. The master lost the challenge and 1,000 gold coins. But more than that, it was the blow to his pride. He went home sulking. Back at home, Delightful grazed peacefully, and the master, distraught, said, "Delightful, how could you do this to me? And now you're grazing so peacefully after I was so badly embarrassed in town." Delightful said, "You called me a dumb animal and insulted me in front of everyone. In my whole life, have I ever stepped on you? No. Broken anything? No. Made a mess where I shouldn't? No. Behaved like a dumb animal? No." The master conceded, "No, you haven't, my beloved pet." He said, then why do you crack the whip above my head and call me dumb? And the master acquiesced, and so Delightful said, find the merchant and challenge him again, this time for 2,000 gold coins. And again, they found the merchant, and of course he accepted, thinking it would be, again, easy money. And so, again, the master bathed and fed Delightful, brought him to town in front of the assembled, and yoked him to 100 carts. And this time, the master put aside the whip. He picked up a lotus blossom, which he touched to the forehead of Delightful. He looked fondly to the ox as if he were his own child and said, Delightful, my son, will you do me the honor of pulling these 100 carts? And much to everyone's surprise, Delightful pulled the heavy carts until the last one stood in the place of the first. The merchant was shocked and paid 2,000 gold coins, and the assembled onlookers further showered the master and Delightful with gifts. And more than his winnings, the master gained humility and respect. Aren't they sweet? They're just these sweet tales that it's just like our tea today. It's like warm and refreshing, you know? It's just really special. So while this Jataka tale is, it's really about, it's supposed to be about how respect is what brings honor. Respect was what brings honor. But I think you'll see why I also chose the story, because of this ox and cart theme. And I think there's something there also, and even in this Jataka tale, about ways in which we can work with our own mind and ways in which we can really fundamentally relate to ourselves. And that's what we do here. Some of the time, that's our work, is learning to work with ourselves in this way and learning to lay down that whip and remember, right? And remember who we are. I was just thinking when I sat down this morning, all I have to do is just remember. And I don't have to beat myself, goad myself on. I just have to let go and I have to remember. A few days ago, we were all sitting around the breakfast table, the residents and the teachers here, and we were talking about the words, attain Buddhahood. And a lot of translations will use phrases like this, and how kind of we all had a discomfort with this. And I had particularly loved how Koban Roshi would say, return to Buddha. And in the vows, he would say, return to Buddha. Pamela Sensei liked to recollect the Buddha, to recollect it. Right? Recoger, right? To gather it. I just have to remember this. Gather myself back up. And then, so moves the ox, so moves the cart. And so when those thoughts are arising, and we find ourselves getting stuck in our story, it's just like, oh, that's okay. This is just a moment where I forgot who I was. I can now recollect, I can recollect and come back. I can just return to Buddha. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this session with you. Really looking forward to joining you and allowing ourselves to recollect just a bit more and just to sit and show up as you, as much as you can, as much as you can stand it, and then a little more. But when you show up as you, you have to show up as the real you, not who you think you are, but the real you, the equally empty, equally to be loved, equally a coming you. Okay. Thank you. So, okay.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.